Hi, everybody, and welcome to MoCo's Most Famous. I'm Joe Yashiroff, the Director of Content at Montgomery Community Media. Today's guest on the show is Cheryl Kagan, a woman who needs no introduction, but she's going to get one anyway. Maryland State Senator representing District 17, which covers Rockville, Gaithersburg, and she's going to tell me if I left anybody out there.
Nope.
Born in D.C., went to Churchill High School in Potomac, hosts the very informative and fun, if I may say, podcast called Kibitzing with Kagan, which I love that title. I might have to do one called Yakin with Yash, although...
I love that.
You do. Okay, so I have your approval. Cheryl represents, as we said, District 17, state senator since 2015. Before that, Maryland House of Delegates from 95 to 03. Serves as the vice chair of the largest committee in the Senate, the Education, Health, and Environmental Affairs. I was going through your list of accomplishments, all the things you've done, and it's enormous. And so I can't even begin to list them all. And I'm not just saying that. And your career has been very impressive, to say the least. You have a lot of interests. So I don't even know where to begin, Cheryl. So I'm going to begin by just welcoming you to this show. How are you?
Thank you, Joe. I'm so delighted to be here. And if it's okay, since you started with my birth, why don't I just talk about my childhood?
Okay. To start, growing up in Montgomery County, it's called MoCo's Most Famous. So let's start there.
There we go. So you were totally right that I was born in DC, but that was literally where I was born, at Sibley Hospital. But my parents were living in Silver Spring. And so I am a Montgomery County native. I went K through 12 in our public schools. Very proud Churchill Bulldog, but I was a Georgetown Hill Elementary Hoover Groover, and then Churchill Bulldog, graduated and went on to college, came back to do politics and policy, which was not the trajectory I was anticipating.
And so how did that happen? When did that happen, and how did that happen?
Yeah, so I have a facility with languages. One really good thing my mother did as a child, she put me into a French class, like a after school French class in like third or fourth grade. And turns out I took to it really well. So I had French, then I had Hebrew school, and then I started taking Spanish lessons, Spanish classes. And so I ended up with three languages and still have a facility with both. Taught a little bit of ASL. I have a microscopic Russian language that I learned before going to Russia for the first free elections to their parliament. Just so I was going to go into foreign languages when I went to Vassar. And first semester freshman year, I took American Politics 105 with Mr. Bourne. And I always thought that my attitudes, my politics made me a moderate because they were common sense to me. Equality, justice, freedom, peace. You know, that just all seemed like common sense. And it turns out those views made me a liberal. So I ended up taking the T2 bus from my mother's home in Potomac down to DuPont Circle, where I walked in off the street onto Ted Kennedy's presidential campaign in 1980. And the first day I photocopied checks. And by the end of that summer, I was paid staff on the floor of the Democratic Convention, and I was totally hooked.
Wow. So that's when the light went off. I mean, was it, did you hear music? Was it one of those moments? I kind of had that when I went into sports television. So I've experienced that. So did you have a moment where you said, oh yeah, this is it?
It's a story that's too long and involved to tell, okay. But I was able as an 18, 19 year old to uncover a serious thing. I'll just do that. Okay. And got the attention of the very highest level of the national campaign, and just was recognized for skills that I didn't know I had, and was working with super smart people. And the work was different every day, every hour. I would fail terribly if I were a widget maker working in a factory or something, doing the same thing every day. And so I'm blessed to be challenged by different issues, different constituents, different areas, and different opportunities every single day.
And you do it. And you know, we've had only two or three conversations, I think, before today. But you seem to do it with a verve, a passion. I don't know what the right word is. So it feels like it's not a job to you, even though it is a job and it's a very serious job, that you love everything that you're doing.
Thank you. One of the quick stories that I tell is of reading the newspaper over breakfast. And some of the viewers won't know what I'm talking about, but it used to be that the news was printed on pieces of paper. And I was reading the newspaper and I read a story and I said, that's an outrage. Someone ought to do something about that. And when you're an elected official, and you know, I'm very privileged to be the senator for all of Gaithersburg, virtually all of Gaithersburg and all of Rockville. Mm-hmm. And I can say, that's an outrage. I'm going to do something about it. And I just feel so honored to be able to make a difference and work on important issues.
That is very fortunate that you love it and you're able to make a difference. And there's so many causes and bills that you've authored and passed through. Let's just pick one or two if we can, because we don't have time to go through all the things that you've done. So why don't we?
I'm going to pick three if I could.
Go ahead.
All right. I'll do them fairly briefly. Three people have died in my district when 911 has failed. I've spent the last 7 years working on improving Maryland's 911 and shifting to next generation 911. I've passed 12 laws that put Maryland at the forefront nationally, and I'm so proud of the work we've done, ensuring that we've had funding, staffing, addressing cybersecurity, training, recruitment, diversity, oversight, just all of the aspects of 911. I have now visited 19 of the 24 911 centers around the county, and it's been amazing. Issue two that I will mention is nonprofits, because they're about 12% of our economy, our workforce, and yet they are often overlooked. People say, how can we help small businesses? And we should totally be helping our small businesses. I am perpetually saying, yes, let's help our small businesses and nonprofits. And sometimes it literally can be an amendment of two words, and nonprofit, that's eligible for this grant program, this opportunity. But these are the folks who make a difference in every community, whether it's a Democratic or Republican, rural or urban, wealthy or poor, they are everywhere. And if all of the food pantries, homeless shelters, battered women's shelters, arts organizations, health clinics all close down, our communities would be worse for it, and government would have to pick up the slack and pay for it. We've got to do better at supporting the nonprofit sector, including Montgomery Community Media.
Exactly. I was just
part of the arts and humanities. I served 8 years on our Maryland State Arts Council and 6 years as vice president of the Arts and Humanities Council of Montgomery County. So it's a big passion. And then the third one I'm going to mention is consumer protection. One of the best compliments a reporter has ever written about me when I was in the House of Delegates. And I should mention that I had a 12-year gap that I was in for 8 years in the House. And I decided I didn't need a fancy title to make a difference. And I got out, and I was out for ultimately 12 years. And now I've been in the Senate for 8 years. And should the voters have me back? And I think they will, because I now have no opposition, then I will have I will be elected for another 4-year term. But consumer protection, this reporter wrote that I am the voice for the only special interest that doesn't have a highly paid lobbyist, and that's the consumer. And I have been working on issues around transparency, fairness, and access for consumers throughout my whole career, and continue to do so.
You talked about the election that's coming up on November 8th. It's been talked about, written about how huge of an election, not only in Montgomery County, not only in Maryland, but obviously in the entire United States. How can you put into a few words how crucial this election is to everyone in this country?
Absolutely. So let me start by saying I am proudly wearing my West Moore button. I was the first legislator outside of Baltimore City to endorse Wes in the fall of 2021. And he loves saying, you know, Senator Kagan endorsed me when I was at 1% in the polls in a 10-way race. And he is, I expect that he will be our next governor, and he is extraordinary. you mentioned that I'm vice chair of Education, Health, and Environmental Affairs. We oversee election laws. And because you only limited me to two, and there were three, I'm now wedging in that okay. I've become kind of the elections person.
Yes.
And I passed three emergency election bills last year, one of which was inexplicably vetoed by Governor Hogan in a way that nobody understood other than that he was pandering to the far right wing of the Republican Party. It created a hot mess in the primary, and we had to even battle not just lawsuits, but create regulations and stuff to try to fix what would have been addressed by my bill. We're bringing that back. I will have several election bills. Shifting the focus nationally, though, so certainly in Maryland, we tend to, knock wood, be anticipating a lot of Democratic and thoughtful victories here. But the race is much broader. And I have to give a shout out to Congressman David Trone in the 6th District. And I'm lucky to work with him in the Gaithersburg half of my district. And my friend and former legislator, Heather Mazier on the Eastern Shore and up the Upper Eastern Shore. She's extraordinary. And I am really hoping that she will defeat Congressman Andy Harris. But outside of Maryland, we're looking at you know, a very close tipping of the balance between thoughtful, progressive, moving forward, looking forward leaders like our own Chris Van Hollen, like Jamie Raskin, like David Trone, working to protect women's reproductive rights and access to abortion, addressing our climate crisis, improving our schools, our infrastructure, our access to healthcare, and so much more, versus going backwards with election deniers and access to guns and scary, discriminatory, hateful, close-minded issues, whether it's about ethnic diversity, LGBTQ access, respect. And it's just, it's terrifying. And truly any one of several states could tip the balance, whether we're looking at Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, Pennsylvania, they are all going to be close. And any one of them that goes the wrong way could mean a complete national upheaval in our policy.
How you touched on it, but as a not talking to you as a state senator, not talking to you as a person, as a human, as a resident of Montgomery County,
yeah,
does it make you sad how split this country is on some what many people would say are basic issues and some people would consider them no-brainers? Does that make you sad?
Combination of sad and angry.
Yeah.
I'd like to say I'm surprised, but I think I'm almost getting used to it and mm-hmm. just being disgusted by it. Donald Trump has set our country back more years than I can fathom. Right now, the Montgomery County Council is debating whether to pass a symbolic resolution condemning anti-Semitism. Hate in this country when people are being assassinated as they pray, whether it's in Charleston, South Carolina at Mother Emanuel or at the Tree of Life in Pittsburgh at the synagogue, at Eitz Chaim Synagogue. It's insane that we can't come together and condemn hate, whether it's against Asian Americans, whether it's about lesbian and gay and trans neighbors, whether it's about Jews, Asians, I already said that, African-American, Latinos, mm-hmm. immigrants, we have just become so hateful of anything that isn't us. And that kind of small-mindedness is just tragic.
You mentioned, among other things, immigration. I know you, that's one of the many things that you've been involved with. Tell us yeah. something that you're maybe working on right now in terms of immigration, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have two immigration related bills. They have both. So several years ago, I passed a bill that I called Freedom to Serve. And if someone who is not yet an American citizen has been in the military, has been honorably discharged, has put their life on the line for our country, we passed a law that enabled them to become police citizens, the police officers. To apply to become police officers, you have to be an American citizen. You used to have to. Well, they've already been background checked. They've been trained. They're courageous. Why wouldn't we want to diversify our police officers, our police forces, especially in light of Freddie Gray and George Floyd and the challenges with recruiting police officers? I'm coming back to actually expand that bill because it was too narrow the way it ultimately became law. So I'm coming back with that. I'm going to be working with Delegate David Fraser Hidalgo from the District 15, the Potomac Germantown District, and he's a former police officer. The other one I passed through the Senate last year, which is addressing our healthcare shortage. So if you go into a hospital or grandma needs a home healthcare nurse or something, she may be waiting around for a while. And critical care is really challenged. The hospitals, the doctors, the home healthcare people, all those folks endorsed my bill that I worked on with now Chair Jocelyn Pena Melnick, and Delegate Ariana Kelly is going to be sponsoring it this year, the Vice Chair. And that is going to allow people who are not yet citizens, but who have gone through our school system, who have been educated, who have passed all the qualifications to become healthcare employees, to allow them to get licensed. So they can work as nursing assistants, physician assistants, nurses, and help provide healthcare costs, healthcare to Maryland residents. It's huge. It's really important. And it passed the Senate last year. We ran out of time in the House, but I'm really hopeful that we'll move that forward.
One of the questions on the ballot is about marijuana. I know you're involved in that question and some legislation. If you could share with us what you're working on with that.
So I'm not a drug user and sort of not a big fan. I think it's a very complicated issue. I'm supporting the ballot measure and I assume it will pass. But I did amend the bill on the Senate floor, working with my Republican colleague, Senator Chris West of Baltimore County. He and I sponsored legislation a few years ago that would allow for oral swab testing. Mm-hmm. The problem is that in every state that has decriminalized or legalized cannabis, there's a huge spike in impaired driving. Mm-hmm. And we have tests for driving while intoxicated, driving under the influence, for alcohol. There is technology now for cannabis, and we should be using it. And so I passed an amendment that would allow that. So we can make sure we get drugged drivers, not just drunk drivers, right, but drugged drivers off our roads.
You mentioned working with a Republican colleague. You don't hear about that a whole lot in today's politics because we're so split.
Yeah.
Do you see a day where Democrats and Republicans can work together and try to make our country better than it is right now?
One can hope. I make the effort. I have relationships with all of my Republican colleagues. Some of them are, as in Democrats, are easier to work with and more aligned on some issues than others. But on my 911 stuff, I have to give a shout out to my friend in Arundel County, District 33, Ed Riley, who is retiring after a worthy career and making a difference on a lot of issues. He has said that 911 and working with me on that has been one of the most important issues and one of the most important endeavors. We disagree on abortion. We disagree on my styrofoam bill. We disagree on a lot of stuff, but on 911, 100% aligned. I've passed a Kagan-Hershey bill on election reform. We've done, when I can, I work with my Republican colleagues.
You mentioned Westmore, you showed us your button.
Yes.
That race between Westmore and Dan Cox, there's nothing subtle about that race. It offers two very stark choices. How would you describe the choice for Marylanders in that vote? Trying to put aside for a second that you support Westmore.
So with that stipulation, I will say that I think that Wes offers hope and an uplifting vision for the future. And Dan Cox offers a vision of fear. I think they're really different. As I said, I'm an enthusiastic, early, and proud supporter of Wes Moore and Aruna Miller to lead our state forward. Wes, as many viewers will know, is not just a best-selling author and a Rhodes Scholar and White House Fellow and business leader and nonprofit leader, but he is an Army veteran. And his mantra that he talks about on the campaign trail a lot is leave no one behind. And that was one of their fundamental values. And that is what he has brought to the campaign trail and what he would bring to the governor's mansion. Everyone should have access to a great education, to healthcare, to a clean environment, and so much more. And I think he's going to bring that value and bring people together to get things done. And I should tell you that going back to your bipartisan question, I was just in Hagerstown in Washington County, which is Washington County is pretty red, pretty Republican. And I was also just in Queen Anne's County on the Eastern Shore, both at the at their 911 centers. And I heard in both places and saw support for Wes Moore and Aruna Miller, because Dan Cox's vision does not inspire. And on the contrary, it makes people fearful.
If Wes Moore were to win, win the race, which he's expected to do, of course, we don't know anything in advance, but we expect that to happen in a Democratic state.
I'm going to knock wood here, yes. Okay. Although, wait, I'm going to interrupt you. In a Democratic state, I'm going to put air quotes, because we've just had 8 years of Larry Hogan.
Well, and that's exactly my question. Okay. So how, okay, if that happens, how will that change the dynamic? Now you have a Democratic government throughout. How will that change?
So people around the country and around Maryland come up to me and they say, Senator Kagan, they said, I'm a Democrat, but I have to say, Larry Hogan seems like an okay guy. And I can tell you as a person, I mean, he loves his wife and his kids and grandkids, and he's a good person. But what I always say is that he's not nearly as bipartisan and collaborative as his PR people would have you believe. And that's witnessed, he vetoed our abortion bill. He vetoed our gun safety bill. He vetoed my election bill. He is not moderate, and he has been tacking to the right as he is looking to possibly run for president in the United States. It's hard to see how a not crazy Republican, I won't even call him a moderate, but a not crazy right-wing Republican could have traction in this current Republican Party. I guess in a crowded field, maybe he could build some level of support. We'll see what happens. I'll be focused on the Democrats, obviously.
I understand. And so I wanted to ask you about the county council after a redistricting. It's going to be 11 members, and it is expected that 6 of those 11, the majority, will be women, yes, which is a big deal. How big of a deal? What will that mean for Montgomery County?
Yep. So first off, I oppose making the change to the county council, the 9-member council. And there were arguments on both sides, obviously, and the voters, chose 11. I like the idea of voting for a majority. I have my district council member plus 4 at-large county council. So I get to vote personally. Every one of us gets to vote for 5 of the 9. Now we're only going to be voting for 5 of 11, not a majority. And so I think each voter loses a little bit of clout and a little bit of access. Having said that, and pivoting to the gender diversity, thank goodness it's high time. Having one woman, Nancy Navarro, trying to, in a superhuman way, trying to speak for all women. And yes, our male colleagues and the men on the council are wonderful, and they are feminists and responsive and all that. It is different. And having women in the majority is going to be evident. And I suspect that there will be changes that will be exciting to watch.
And you would think in Montgomery County, which is so diverse, considered diverse, that would have happened, or that there would have been women running for county executive. I know Nancy Florine in the last cycle did, but.
And so, Rose Krasnow, that's who I recruited and endorsed after considering a run myself. People had really encouraged me to run, and I decided that another 4 years in the Senate was the better option. But I recruited and strongly endorsed Rose Krasnow, former Rockville mayor and planning board for a very long time.
Did you make that decision because you felt you could make more of a difference in your current role than as the county executive?
It was a mix of a lot of things. I I had a lot of issues. I was in the middle of my 911 work. I just didn't think that I could walk away from that agenda that is literally life or death. Mm-hmm. And to do so would be irresponsible. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I stayed. And now I'm in leadership, as we've discussed, vice chair of the committee with the largest number of bills of the four committees, mm-hmm. and working with the Senate president, Bill Ferguson, whom I deeply admire and respect. So we've had a really good 4 years.
Cheryl, with your permission, I would like to put aside politics and the serious stuff. Can we talk about some fun stuff now?
Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk about, we mentioned earlier your podcast. So, I mean, I'm an amateur podcaster. You're a pro. You host Kibitzing with Kagan, and you've done, I don't know how many hundreds of episodes. So where did that idea begin, and how much fun are you having doing that?
Thank you for the question, Joe. It's actually a great story. I got a call from a friend who said, Kagan, you need to have a podcast. I said, I have no time. How would that? That's impossible. Ha, ha, ha. And kind of, you know, ended the call. 4 hours later, literally 4 hours later, I called him back, had come up with the name Kibitzing with Kagan. And for folks who may not know, to kibitz is to chat. So brief chats with people I find fascinating. So I had the name of it, the logo, and my first guest, who was a seven-year-old constituent named Kavanaugh Bell, who does anti-bullying work and stuff. And so off to the races. And I've done at least one podcast every week. I interviewed every Democratic candidate for governor, except for Peter Franchot, who canceled and then didn't reschedule. And I interviewed both candidates for attorney general and all that. And so they've been fun. And the great part is I get to pick, I get to ask the questions. And I have kibitzed with everyone from our police chief to our superintendent of education to President Ferguson to nonprofit leaders doing housing, homeless, the arts, mm-hmm. and more, and to my staff to I don't know, all over the place. If they really to the first trans senator ever elected, that was last week, and yeah, they're all pretty extraordinary.
Everyone out there needs to make sure to go back and look at all. How many episodes are we at right now?
I don't even know. A bunch. But I hope people will subscribe on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/sen, like Senator, Sen Cheryl Kagan. And you can just subscribe and you'll hear about my next podcast.
Sounds good. Now, kibitzing, I believe, is going to be the only Yiddish word we use, but the podcast isn't over yet. So we'll see if there'll be other Yiddish words used. So I had a question. Okay, so what, besides being fun and besides the fact that you have to kind of squeeze it into your incredibly busy schedule, how has that helped get the message out for you?
I'm not sure I know that. Yeah, there's some that have totally gotten a ton of views, mm-hmm. like when I interviewed Novavax, which is in my district and was working on a COVID vaccine. And that was huge. And that got a lot of attention. And sometimes fewer people watch. I just interviewed the retired publisher of the Washington Post, Don Graham. We talked about Watergate and the Pentagon Papers and his father's tragic death by suicide when he was publisher of the Washington Post and so much more. They're interesting. I learn a lot. And then I hope to educate my viewers.
And they are fun. I haven't listened to all several hundred, but I have listened to a few, watched a few, and they are great. Okay, so you talked about languages. So first of all, how many languages do you speak, and are you fluent in all of them?
Oh, golly. Okay, so French is my strongest language other than English. I call myself a grammar geek and a word nerd, and I say that proudly. I am a nationally ranked Scrabble player, if you want to talk Scrabble. That's a big part of my life, actually. And French is my strongest language. I love speaking French. My Spanish is decent enough that I can communicate. And one of my favorite stories from the campaign trail is when I was knocking on doors of primary voting Democrats in my first race for the Senate. And there was a woman and her daughter who were who were here from Salvador. And so I chatted with her in Spanish, and I crossed the street, and the next prime Democrat was a gentleman from Cameroon. And I shifted into French, and we had a lovely conversation. I just like, I love my district.
Wow.
So Gaithersburg and Rockville are two of the most linguistically diverse cities in the country. And Gaithersburg's in the top 10. It's very cool. I love that.
You mentioned Scrabble. So everybody plays Scrabble, but not everybody's nationally ranked. I do Wordle, and I'm pretty good at it.
I do Wordle, yeah.
So where did this Scrabble thing come from? Just from the love of words? Simple as that?
I remember watching, as a child, watching my mother play Scrabble. Took it up again, an old boyfriend a million years ago, and I used to play a lot of Scrabble. And at some point, I started going to Scrabble Club, which is Tuesday nights in Chevy Chase, DC, and then started competing. And then fast forward a couple of years, and I was, for the first time, I got on a plane to play Scrabble. I have done road trips to play Scrabble, to Philly, to New Jersey, to Baltimore County, and elsewhere. But I flew to Reno for the national championships. And I went up to the folks in charge. This was in 2019. And I said, I asked them where next year's tournament was going to be. And they said, well, we haven't decided. We've gotten a couple of letters of interest, but we haven't decided. And I said, you need to come to Maryland. And I called the Convention and Visitors Bureau, Montgomery County, their CEO. And I called the CEO of Visit Baltimore. And I asked how quickly they could get a letter of inquiry to the Scrabble, the North American Scrabble Players Association. And a couple months later, I hosted a site visit, and then announced on a podcast, a live streaming podcast, that the Scrabble Championships were coming to Baltimore in 2020. And COVID. Then it was coming to Baltimore in 2021. COVID. So 2022, we hosted the National Scrabble Championships in Baltimore with competitors from 42 states and 9 countries. Hmm. And I was just thrilled, and I've already pitched before it even ended. I already pitched, come back to Maryland. People had a really good experience. They went to the Orioles game. They sampled the food. They walked around Inner Harbor and some of the neighborhoods of beautiful Charm City, Baltimore.
Senator Kagan, you make things happen. Is that would that be an apt description of you?
Well, I thank you. Well, I always say that and I'm going to use profanity here, but I always say I'm the GSD senator because I get shit done. And then Tom Perez stole it from me on his campaign, and he started talking about the GSD candidate for governor. But I think we need leaders who GSD, and I hope to continue to do that in my tenure and in my career.
And as we wrap up, and that was a great point, what is the largest score you've ever had in Scrabble? I have to know before we leave here.
Well into 500, actually. It's rare, but what? I have gotten something 540 something, I think, which is a pretty
word.
Oh, no. For a game.
Oh,
no.
Okay. For a game. Okay. The highest, for one word.
The highest word I got, it was 231. I have to do the math again. I have to do it.
So clearly a triple word with an X and a Q or I.
It was a triple triple. So it was times 9 points plus 50. And it was Sequele. And I was in Paris on a park bench, Paris, France, on a park bench alone. And I wanted to to tell people, but I knew that there was no one who would understand or care. But I was pretty excited about that, actually.
Wow. Okay. So my last question is, with all the things you do, work-wise and outside of work, there's no chance you sleep at all, correct? There's no time for sleep.
People say that. I'm tired a lot. I go to the gym. I have time with friends. I date. I travel. And we haven't talked music, so I just have to do music really fast.
Gotta do it.
I have folk and great music, and I host national touring singer-songwriters in my home. I've done it since 2003, and mine was the first unionized house concert series in the country with a collective bargaining agreement with Local 1000 of the American Federation of Musicians. So I'm really proud of that. And
can you name us one singer that we may have heard of that maybe, no, it's okay.
I'm thinking. John Vesner, whose wife is Kathy Mattea, who wrote a lot of her biggest hits. He's played my series. I'm just trying to think who's mainstream and that people know. I've had, when I hosted, I created, produced, and emceed the inaugural after Donald Trump got elected, five performers raising money for five progressive causes. And I had Sweet Honey and the Rock as the headliner. Nice. For my first big one. And that was cool. We had a sold out crowd of over 500 people.
That's great.
So that was pretty cool.
All right. So we could talk for three more hours, but you're too busy for that. So we're going to wrap this up, and I'm going to say, I'd like to do this again sometime. And
sure.
Thank you so much for squeezing us into your busy schedule, Senator Kagan. Thank you very much.
It was so fun. Thank you, Joe. And thanks to everyone at Montgomery Community Media for all you all do to serve the community and make sure that folks know of all the cool and exciting things that are going on around our diverse and growing county.
Appreciate that. And that'll do it for this episode with State Senator Cheryl Kagan. This episode of MoCo's Most Famous, brought to you by Montgomery Community Media. And we will see you next time. Have a great day, everybody.